sahanavavatu, sahanabhunaktu, sahavivyam karabhavahai, tejasvinavaditamastu ma vidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shanti. Om jaya shri krishna chaitanya prabhu nityananda shri advaita gadadhara shri vasadi gaura bhakta vrinda hare krishna 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 hare 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 rama 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 hare hare
Reading text 7. The holy name, character, pastimes, and activities of Krishna are all transcendentally sweet like sugar candy. Although the tongue of one afflicted by the jaundice of avidya, ignorance, cannot taste anything sweet, it is wonderful that simply by carefully chanting these sweet names every day, a natural relish awakens within his tongue, and his disease is gradually destroyed at the root. So in this verse, we see what is our disease.
Jaundice.
Avidya. Jaundice like avidya, or avidya like jaundice. So what is the nature of this jaundice? What is the active principle? Okay, which displays us?
Material attachment?
Yes. Material attachment, which means basically we are more interested in other things, in material things, than in Krishna. This is our disease. We have stronger taste to material things which are not connected to the Lord than to service of the Lord. Why this is a diseased condition? Yes. If it is a disease, that means there is a natural state which is health. And our healthy natural state is we are all servants of Krishna. This nature. So if we are not attracted to our natural activity, which is loving service to Krishna, that means we have a disease. And we can take heart of this. We can feel encouraged because often we feel a bit dry in performing our devotional service, and we are wondering when this day will come, when I'll get this spiritual taste. Here Rupa Goswami explains, well, even before that, in the previous verses, that we should be very utsaha nishya dayat and determined, enthusiastic, and in due course of time we'll get this taste. Why? Because it is natural. This is our natural function. Srila Prabhupada always emphasizes that Krishna consciousness is not something artificially imposed on the soul. It is not a superimposition on the soul. It is natural. And if you have this natural tendency, it is just a matter of time and practice. The example is given with the child who cannot walk in the beginning. But this walking propensity is natural and he will develop it. So we can, actually, if you think deeply on this verse, it's very encouraging. It is svata siddha gyan. That means it is the natural knowledge, perfect knowledge of the soul, Krishna consciousness. Yes.
So I was just meditating on this point yesterday, and it seems if you're going in the Shikshastaka, the processes of progression in the spiritual life is actually given. And the second verse, it tells about this stage where we realize that we don't have any taste. And that should naturally lead to us becoming humble. But in my own life, I see it's going back and forth, because then I become humble, and I get a little more taste, and then again I become humble. And it's going back to the previous stage. So, and this actually a great stumbling block, like this, this pride.
Yeah.
This I am doing.
Yeah, this is the reason why Lord Chaitanya says one should a little later in Shikshashtaka. Well, yeah, next verses later. The qualification to chant the holy name constantly is to be humble. This is the
way to be. Funny how some devotees, they sound very proud when you tell people how humble they are. I'm very humble. Yeah, I say it.
Yeah, it happens.
So can you give some advice on how to maintain this humble state of mind?
I got some advice actually.
Okay. Yeah.
Which is like, see it in comparison, not to where you were, but where you need to go. So this was one devotee who was telling me about how the Uttamadhikari can be so humble. It's because he's thinking constantly, yeah, sure, I'm advanced, but how much should I really be doing with these facilities I have? Therefore, I'm completely useless. Mm-hmm. So it's by comparison.
Mm-hmm. Nice point. And also, I remember one Swami, he said once that even if you're very advanced, you still 1/10,000th of the tip of the hair. It doesn't change. And even the advanced devotees we see in their example, they're very humble. Why? Because they see that, as Prabhupada mentioned, first of all, they always, the devotional service is very dynamic, so there is always a room for improvement. Even if you're perfect. And another thing is that we cannot do anything, we cannot accomplish anything on our own. In the material world, we are moving this material energy only because the super soul allows us to do this. And in the spiritual world also, everybody is dependent on Krishna. So if we meditate on this, that how small we are, and even if we are successful in anything, then this is the mercy of the Vaishnavas and the Krishna, then this will keep us in a humble mood. And humble mood means we are in knowledge, actually. It comes from knowledge, from intelligence.
That seems to be the point, because that works when you're on the platform of intelligence, but those times where you drift into the realm of mind, then it tends to get lost.
Yeah, so it will come back and forth for a while, then utsaha nischa dharya tatva karma pravartana. The thing is that people, when people say get real, sometimes when we go out and distribute books, people say get a job, all these things, get real. But actually, what is real? Real means pure devotee of Krishna. This is the only reality. And we can be very encouraged by this information we are getting from this verse, that the goal of our life is to become ourselves. This is the goal. It's not something that we should strive with great endeavor for, and then once we reach there, if we reach at all, then we might not even like it. This is what is going on everywhere else except in Krishna consciousness. People have goals, they make endeavor, and once they reach the goal, they realize this won't actually make me happy. If they are a little intelligent, they will understand this. But this is our actual real position, and it's very nice pleasure. Krishna says in Gita, susukam kartva susukam kartum abhiya. It is performed with pleasure, happiness. And the example given is, we spoke about this, the jaundice. And what is the cure? Sugarcane juice every day. Hmm. by chanting Hare Krishna mantra and glorifying Krishna regularly, every day, we gradually become pure and we awaken this taste for the sweetness of the devotional service. The devotional service is sweet, naturally, and we have natural tendency to appreciate devotional service. But right now we are in a diseased condition. Narottam Das Thakur says, Ratina Janmilu Kene Thai. This chanting is coming from the spiritual world, Golokera, Premadana. But, Harinama Sankirtana, but I have no attraction. And this is our disease. We have no attraction for our real position, but we have plenty of material attractions and attachments. So this is precisely our disease. In Srimad Bhagavatam, in 4th canto, it is stated that there is no stronger obstruction to one's self-interest than thinking other subject matters to be more pleasing than one's self-realization. In other words, one's self-realization means ultimately Krishna consciousness, not just realizing that you're not the body. So there is no stronger obstruction, there is no greater obstacle than thinking that there is something more pleasing, more interesting, more practical than Krishna consciousness. So if we think there is something more interesting, naturally, while we are chanting Hare Krishna, if we chant at all, then we'll be, what? You think, while chanting, you think there's plenty of things to think about while chanting. What should I think while chanting? This is a problem for many, many of us. So we, in the morning, we, okay, today I'm going to chant 16 rounds. What should I think of while chanting? My, this or that? Or... So then, that means inattentive chanting. This is the result. And from inattentive chanting, the acharyas explain all other offenses. They kind of grow up from this one, which is the 11th offense, unattentive chanting. And this ignorance prevents us from relishing the holy name. To think that there is something more relishable, then we cannot relish the holy name. And what's the only cure? If you read carefully this purport, you see two times Prabhupada makes the point. What is the cure? It is, despite this disease, if one with great care and attention takes to Krishna consciousness, that means to chant Hare Krishna with great care and attention. Two times Prabhupada makes the point. So the only remedy is to take the holy name with great care and attention, attentively to chant. This is actually at long run, this is what discriminates between men and boys. Who will take this challenge in life to every day to strive to chant with attention, to try? Who will actually take this challenge? Because we see in our practice we are doing so many things, so many aspects of devotional service while chanting, and we can become easily bewildered by our success. Let's say you are a very successful manager or scholar or preacher, but you don't actually attempt to chant with attention. And then you start thinking about yourself, I'm actually a good devotee, I'm successful, I'm advanced. Why? Because I accomplished so many things. I built this temple, I made so many devotees like this. But we see in 10, 20, 30 years, this attentive chanting usually catch up with you at one point. And this is one of the main reasons why sometimes we see advanced devotees, they leave. Because they didn't approach this chanting with attention. They didn't try. They didn't apply actually themselves. And it is also very nice, very practical, because you can say, I have accomplished so many things. And as both of you mentioned, this is an obstacle, because that means you're proud. But you can never say, I chant good rounds. You can say, relatively, compared to yesterday, today was a little better. But you can never chant, you can never say, if you have some common sense, you can never say, I chanted, my chanting today was, that's the thing, that is the perfection. I don't have to improve it anymore. So it will keep you humble in regard to your question also. It will keep us humble, because we realize every time while chanting, we realize how much garbage is there still in our mind, and how we still have this strong material taste. So we should consider the name, the holy name and Krishna identical, and they are identical, there is no difference. So we should take this in heart. That means practically we should avoid the 10 offenses, of course, and we should, let's say if Krishna walks in the room while we are chanting, that means how much attention we will pay to him, how happy and grateful, our full attention will be on Krishna. So the same thing should be with the holy name. Shouldn't be like Krishna walks in and we say, nice to see you, please sit down here, I'll come later and talk to you. This is what we're doing while chanting. Bhaktivinoda Thakur often. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that this is called pramada. Pramada means madness. You invite someone, you call out for someone, when he shows up, you don't pay attention to him. That means an attentive chanting. I'm sure you've seen such people. No, there are these people that they always say, "I'll talk to you later." No, we speak about this. And then I know people who deal like this for 10 years. They always say for 10 years. They say, "I'll talk to you later. I'll see you. This is very nice, interesting topic. We'll talk later." And then 10 years, 15 years go by, and we never talk about anything. What is the actual reason because of this? Why they deal like this with you? What do you think? Because
slightly sociopathic.
Yeah, but why? Yes. But. It's not an okay. Yeah, that's the thing. That's what I wanted to make as a point. Is that they don't really value your association. That's the thing. They are into this superficial kind of social dealing with you. You're part of the equation somehow. You're part of the environment. They value you. You have some certain good qualities they appreciate, but that's it. They don't really want to take the trouble to come to know you, to talk to you, to share, to open their mind. So this is what we do to Krishna. We like him. He's a nice guy, but it's not enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's the order supplier, most of the cases. He supplies. You pray to him, he supplies things, yes.
I remember once Swaraj Maharaj mentioned that in our heart, we when Krishna comes to knock on the door, then he sees on the carpet one of those signs of, please don't
disturb.
Don't disturb.
Don't disturb, like in the hotel we have this, don't disturb. Yeah.
Swaraj Maharaj used to say that in our heart, then when Krishna comes up on the door, then they have these carpets in the west. I mean, yeah, let's say, please don't listen.
That's serious. We're laughing, but yes.
You mentioned the pramadas. As I remember, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he analyzes it into three categories.
Mm-hmm.
One is indifference, one is
distraction.
Distraction from the exterior objects,
yeah.
And one is by the mind's ideas, those things. Mm-hmm. So would they all be in the category of not wanting to have relationships with Krishna?
They would be based on this. Because just consider, if you're in love with someone, are those going to appear in your mind? Those three. No, you're just constantly absorbed in thoughts about this person. It doesn't come. Our problem is that we don't have love for Krishna at the moment, although it's natural for us. So I guess yes. So how much respect we would give Krishna if he personally walks in? Or how much respect we are trained to give the deities while on the altar or in the kirtan? Then at least that much respect we should be giving to the holy name, because there is no difference between them. Especially if you are for a long time pujari, and familiarity brings contempts, it might happen. Yeah. This is important, because one of the impetus to chant properly with attention is to try to take some challenge for Krishna in life. Like if you go out preaching, then usually if there is a challenge and you are in position that you actually understand very clearly that you are dependent on Krishna's mercy at every moment, then you'll chant naturally with more feeling and more attentively. And just compare the situation, you're sitting inside your room and everything is nice, it's warm there, and there is no problem, apparently. Then you can try to chant, but it will be more difficult to remember Krishna if everything is nice. But if you go, you take trouble, take risk for the preaching, for example, then it is more easy. We are always in a situation that we always depend on Krishna, but in different situations, we realize or we don't. We are conscious about this, or we are not. So it's good to sometimes to go out of the comfort zone and try to do something extraordinary, special. These are the Ekadashi days, so at least twice a month, or more often. So in purport there is explanation of the three stages of chanting. The first stage, the offensive stage, one chants the holy name while committing all the offenses, or some of them. Then the clearing stage means we chant, we know about the offenses, and we try our best to not to avoid them. And if we do this, we'll come to the perfect stage, the pure chanting, when we chant the pure name. Yes.
So the clearing stage, we're doing our best to give up the offenses, but we'll keep on coming. What if our endeavor is not very good?
Again, verse number, we spoke about this. Verse number 2. No, 3, sorry. Utsaha nishchaya dairya. Tat karma pravartana. Sangha tyagat satavrite sadbir bhaktir prasidit. We have to understand this point. There is no alternative. What we do? What are you going to do if you have problems in devotional service? If, let's say, in the beginning, there is this period, everybody experiences this period usually. We say one gets lots of mercy, and then there is a period when there is some kind of dryness. Then what you do? What is the alternative? You go back to the material life, or
you look for ways to improve yourself.
Or you.
That was the basic focus of my question.
Yeah.
But usually it turns back to, you know, you just have confidence and endeavor.
It's all based on proper association and manana. Trying to understand how the instructions given in Shastra are applied in your life and what they actually mean for you. Yeah.
So that would lead to... Actually, I have trying to contemplate, and I have found that in the periods where I'm trying to live my life more and more of goodness, there are less disturbances, but
said that we should take risks in the service, and that means sometimes using passion, you know, in the service, and that tends to increase, you know, the disturbances while chanting. So it's so trying to find a balance. Because there's also the tendency of living in life in the mode of goodness,
yeah,
be attached to just doing the regular thing, you know, and you don't want any extra endeavors because that
becomes trouble.
Again, it's like floating around.
Well, if, as you mentioned, there is passion involved, then you will go back to tamas. That's nature. We shouldn't think that in order to be active, you need to be in the mode of passion. No, people in the mode of goodness are very active.
But a lot of people around us, at least that's my problem. People around me try to push me to come into the mode of passion. So you're like, just lazy, you know, you're more, You also have to follow authorities, you know. These people are in authoritative positions. Sometimes they're not really willing to listen. Sometimes they're telling them, you know, if I'm doing that, I'm having problems.
Authorities pushing you to the mode of, to be more active, and that means more passion, and then that creates trouble in the future. But it's better to be conditioned by the mode of goodness than by the mode of passion. Can't say much about that. Verse 8. Before you read, excuse me. So until now we covered verses 1 to 7, which are related to what we explained this in the beginning. There are three sections. Yes.
Vaidhi Bhakti.
Okay. So verse 1 to 7, Vaidhi Bhakti. Then verse 8 is describing Raganuga Sadhana. And then from 9 till 11, we are going to deal with Baba and Prema Bhakti. So this is the verse describing Raganuga.
The essence of all advice is that one should utilize one's full time, 24 hours a day, in nicely chanting and remembering the Lord's divine name, transcendental forms, qualities, and eternal pastimes, thereby gradually engaging one's tongue and mind. In this way, one should reside in Vraja, Goloka Vrindavan, and serve Krishna under the guidance of devotees. One should follow in the footsteps of the Lord's beloved devotees who are deeply attached to his devotional service.
Thank you. So if you notice here, the first sentence of these verses is pointing out the previous section. It refers to the Vaidhi Sadhana. The essence of all advice is that one should utilize one's full time, 24 hours a day, nicely chanting and remembering the Lord's divine name, transcendental form, qualities, and pastimes. And if one does this, then he will develop what is called Raganuga. So what is Raganuga? So first of all, let's talk a little bit about the control of the mind. Here in this verse, This is again the main point. The center of all yoga practices is to control the mind, because the mind can be the best friend and the worst enemy. Why it can be the worst enemy? This morning it was explained. Yes.
Because it accepts and rejects. So that means if you haven't got control over it, then it has control over you.
Yes, and that means he will accept and reject material things.
Exactly.
which will bind you to the material world. To, that means basically suffering. Srila Prabhupada quotes Bhagavad Gita 8:6. Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam tyajati anta kalevaram. Tam tam evaiti kauntiya sadatat bhava bhavita. Whatever state of being one remembers when he quits his body, that state he will attain without fail. At the time of death, Prabhupada writes, the mind and intelligence of a living entity create the subtle form of a certain type of body for the next life. If the mind suddenly thinks of something not very congenial, one has to take a corresponding birth in the next life. So, suddenly. Just imagine. Serious business. Just trying to... Okay. Rupa Goswami therefore advises devotees to train their minds in order that the mind will be unable to remember anything other than Krishna. Just pay attention to this. It is not... It is how it is formulated. The mind to be unable to remember anything other than Krishna. It's very high... this is very high standard of mind control. It means the mind is so trained that even if you lose control over the mind, if you're not conscious for a moment about the mind, then still he will be thinking of Krishna. It's like sometimes you see here these buffaloes in the cart, and they know the way. You know how to get from point A to point B. And the guy who is sitting there, he doesn't have to actually to take care so much. He just sits there. He can change his rounds into something else. Yes.
In the Dinabandhu, who said that?
Who said?
Dinabandhu. Said that it's very nice the relationship between the people and the foxes. That the people, they work all day in the market, and the bulls sleep. And then at night time, the bulls walk back home and the people sleep.
Very nice. So we can be busy whole day, Krishna consciousness, and then when you go to sleep, then your mind will dream about Krishna, think about Krishna. Nice. So if the mind is flooded with Krishna conscious topics, he will start repeating these topics to you. He'll start talking to you, well, in a good sense, not in a weird sense. He'll talk to you Krishna Katha all the time, even when you don't pay attention. This is the difference between the mind of the advanced devotee and the neophyte devotee. If by chance the mind of the neophyte devotee gets focused on Krishna, naturally he will go back to Maya, which is natural for the untrained mind. But the mind of the advanced devotee, if by chance he got itself into Prajalpa, very soon, immediately he will go back to Krishna, because he's trained like this. We can say this is a friendly mind. Why friendly? Because he will bring you to Krishna. He will bring you to the spiritual world, the mind. So in the previous verse, Rupa Goswami advised us that by chanting with great care and attention, we can get free from the material attraction and awaken our devotional taste. Now, in this verse, he explains what happens. And he gives instructions what has to happen when we follow the previous instructions. What will happen naturally? So what will happen is that we will develop a spontaneous natural attraction and taste for spiritual activities. And this will happen in the scope of following the footsteps of the eternal associate of Krishna in the spiritual world. And these devotees are called Argatmika Bhaktas. And the one who follows is called Raganuga. So there is the eternal associates, there are the eternal associates of Krishna in the spiritual world. And by following Vaidhi Bhakti with an intense desire, Laulyam, to attain this spiritual taste, and by the mercy of the spiritual master, then we'll naturally develop attraction for particular... Well, first of all, we'll develop attraction and taste for spiritual activities. And then this will be under the guidance of a particular resident of the spiritual world, and will develop natural liking and attraction toward a particular person there. It's not that Bhakta dropped for 2 weeks in the temple and he suddenly says, well, I feel like I want to become a gopi. It's not like this. It comes after the liberated stage, after anartha nivritti. This is made very clear by the acharyas. So unless one is freed from material contamination, it is not possible to develop this raga-nuga, this spontaneous attraction. We can develop certain degree of it, but it won't manifest fully. Yes?
You said unless what?
Excuse me?
You said unless we...
Unless we're not on a liberated platform, it won't happen. I mean, beyond anartha nivritti, at least. So, it is not like the sahajis they imagine. They just imagine. Yes, Prabhu, you want to say something?
It's just that in the last paragraph, it says Prabhupada is raising that when one has developed such attachments, he can spontaneously serve the lotus feet of Krishna even without following the regulated principles. And I have seen this quote and those kind of quotes being misused that for the rasa,
you
know, those rasika bhaktas, you know, so just reject following the devotional process.
No, it's a problem.
Why is Prabhupada phrasing it like this?
Because the impetus for, or the motivation for following, for activity, in the case of these devotees, doesn't come from this sense of duty and obligation, but it comes from spontaneous love. But that means they are not dependent on following these principles, these regulations, because they have developed already this spontaneity. But it doesn't mean that they don't follow it, these regulations. In the case of Sanatana Goswami, for example, it is said that his sadhana was like, what's the word? Carved in a stone. Well, he's so strict. And it is only natural. Why? Because he has got a taste. If he has taste, he likes going for Mangalarti, let's say. If you like something, you're going to do it naturally. So he'll be naturally more strict than the Vaini devotees who are on the lower level. Because he likes. They don't like doing these things. They do these things because they feel this obligation and sense of duty. And Shastra advises them. But advanced devotees, they like doing this. That means they will be more strict. And yeah, externally, nothing changes. The activity of the Raganuga devotee is exactly the same as the neophytes. They do the same things. But internally, they meditate and they do service 24 hours in their spiritual body, in the spiritual world. And this is something genuine. It is not like the sahajis. They just imagine, just because I imagine that I'm a gopi or in Manjari, because I just like this. I feel like doing these things. And just because I imagine, I'm there and I'm doing it. It's not like this. It's a genuine thing. Just like the example given by the acharyas is about the sahajiyas, especially, is two examples. One is with the mango, which is when it is unripe, it is hard. When the mango is ripe, then it becomes soft. So the sahajiyas, they take the mango, which is unripe. That means basically their heart or their advancement. So they would stick, they beat the mango. People doing this also in India. Beat the mango, make it soft, and they sell it as a ripe mango, and they cheat people. And you can be cheated by this, but still the mango is unripe. It's still unripe, although you make it soft. And another example is given a woman, imagine a woman who who lies down and she pretends that she's just about to deliver a child, and she's making the whole show screaming, and but she's not pregnant. Doesn't matter how much she will scream and make the show, she will never deliver a child. Basically, it goes back. If you notice both of these examples, it's not that the woman cannot deliver a child. She can, if she follows the process. It is not that the mango won't get ripe at the end, but it will. And it is not that the sahajiya cannot become pure devotee. He can, but he just doesn't want to go through the standard process given by the acharyas because it's too much trouble, and he's proud. He's very proud. He thinks he knows already everything, and he, just by his nature of bhav, he will get there. Yes.
So just to sum it up, that in this way he is writing it, it would be that he can spontaneously serve the lotus feet of Krishna even without the motives being following regulations. Not that I want to rearrange how he says it, but that's basically.
Yeah, this is. Yeah, and also there's another, this is one way of understanding, there is another way given in Nectar of Devotion. If you remember, there was the example given for a devotee who, because he developed this friendship with the Lord, developed friendship and give up everything for the Lord. These two last, there are like seven, and I think, and the last two are in the sphere of Raganuga, Sadhana. And Prabhupada says there, such a devotee who developed this friendship with the Lord, he can just sometimes go in the temple and lie down in the temple, which is not done by the regular devotees, and it's against the rules. But he can do it. Why? Because he has developed this friendship with the Lord. So, what are the rules actually? This is interesting. Rules means that we don't have this love for Krishna, and Krishna is giving the rules how we develop this love. But what is the main rule? To love Krishna. Yeah, that means to fall in love with Krishna. This is the main rule. So if you have accomplished this, all these other rules, you actually fulfill their purpose. So sometimes you can even act in a way that it seems like breaking the rules, but it's not. But this is not to be imitated, and it's not usually it's not done. Because the advanced devotees, they always give good example, like we mentioned Sanatana Goswami. So our position now is what? We are externally, we engaged in service through our senses. Internally, we try to fix our mind on Krishna. But we find out that our mind wanders away and thinks about material things. But when one is advanced, then everything he's engaged, that externally he engages his senses in service, and internally his mind is absorbed in his particular devotional mood that he has. He knows who he is, and he serves in this capacity. In his eternal relationship with Krishna. That can only take place when the heart is free from all material contamination. It doesn't happen before that. So if we find that we have still taste for material things, that means we are not still on this level, on that level. Although there might be some glimpses. Alright.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Rama Rama